I hate to interrupt you when you're having great ideas to share, but let's go ahead and share some of those ideas with each other. Are there one or two of you that would be willing to tell us how you use it in preparation of your lessons? Any ideas that you shared?
Could we get very far?
Yes. Okay, anybody have any ideas that you wanted to share how you're using it in social studies instruction?
Most of what I do, I'm a 7 to 12 social studies teacher. Most of mine are already developed. I've spent years on them. And one of the things that I do is sit down and start looking at what's new out there. And podcasts, videocasts, United Screaming is one of my favorites. It's my right arm. And I use it a lot for filling in for areas that I may be a little weak on and bring that information in. Of course, Ken Burns is my buddy in teaching.
Yeah.
I use him a lot.
Yeah, especially in secondary where you've got higher level confidence.
Right. And then, but I use that, but I also, because of the way my class is set up, my computer and my LCD projector and my Mimeo are in constant use all the time. And my 7th, 8th grade kids, for a treat, I put in Carmen San Diego, both the world and the U.S., and my 7th and 8th grade compete on who solved the most cases. So that's a big one. Video, I use a lot of video clips. In the years I've been teaching, there's about 500 different videos that I use. I've used 4 or 5 video clips on each one.
Great. So I think that there are a few things that you didn't mention that I'm going to present today, but there are a lot of things that you did mention that I'm also going to present. Okay, somebody else that had an idea? I heard something about flashcards.
Oh, that was me. It was from a CTAP conference a few weeks ago. And they shared that there's a website called Flashcard Friends. Yeah. And you can put pictures and questions, and all that can be the answer. We were studying 8th grade social studies in mentors and inventions. So they used some information, they already gathered the data, and put it on there and made flashcards. And then we used another instructor to talk to me about using the address book and the Apple computer that's in the dock and doing the same thing as a way to practice and learn fast. So we did it with inventions and inventors, but then I asked the kids to apply it to something else. What else could you do with it? Where else could you use this? And Flashcard Friends is free on the web, so you can access it anywhere at home, in school, and use it for a multitude of things. But it was a nice way to compare and they had to go out and find the images.
And that one I hadn't heard of, so there's a new one for us. My name is Christine Keeler.
This is the wrong thing. Starting from here.
My name is Christine Keeler, and this presentation is called A Whirlwind of Possibilities, Technology Integration for Social Studies Teachers. This is a presentation that was first delivered at NCSS in December, so if you were at that, then this probably isn't for you because it's a repeat of that presentation. And it was co-presented with Erin Langhorst. The presentation is based on a paper that is being published by Social Studies Research and Practice within the next month by the title From PowerPoint to Podcasts. The table that you received, or that you, I'll give to you in a few moments, that table is going to appear in that journal. So it's something that I highly encourage you to share. And so everything that I'm presenting today was developed by Eric or me or us jointly. So I want to make sure that I recognize Eric here at the beginning. Would you prefer that I use the microphone, or is this okay?
This is fine.
Okay. Let's get started. Why is this not working the way that I want it to? There we go. All right. There are three different sections to this presentation. First, the introduction, which is going to be quite short. The examples, which is why you came, I'm guessing. And then finally, goal setting. So let's get started. Integrating technology. There are several different ways to talk about integrated technology, and the way that Eric and I chose to talk about it in our paper is using Christopher Mersch's levels of technology integration, or LOT scale. And Mersch says that teachers go from basically not knowing anything about the web and not really caring to using it, integration and infusion, to expanding, going out and using it not only in different ways, but using it with people outside of the classroom, to really refine them, which is where we're at the level where it's truly ubiquitous use, it's transparent, the students are using it. One thing that's inherent in this model is you start off by not using it all, and then you as a teacher start using it, having your PowerPoint slides or bringing in your videos, and then at the end you get to the point where you're actually doing stock market game, and you have your students who are working with financial planners in the field, and they're picking stocks, and they're emailing, and they're text messaging with those financial planners, and everything is completely done online, and the student is completely running it. So we're going from teacher facilitation teacher direction to having student-instructed knowledge. What his model doesn't necessarily imply is that there's another piece in here that really is important, and that's teacher technical competency level. How many of you in here are teachers? How many of you do some teacher training as well? Maybe small groups on your campus? Okay, so many of you, those of you who aren't doing teacher training, you're probably really high on the technical competency level, which is why you're at this conference. And so a lot of the lower level things probably are old hat for you. What I find as a teacher trainer, and those of you who do a lot of teacher training, is that a lot of teachers don't have the technical competency to do some of the basic things. And so letting them know that some of those integration strategies or infusion strategies are out there is a huge thing for them, and it's an important step for them to be able to see those introductory activities. So I'm going to start with the lower level things, and then we'll work up. That's how this is designed. Eric and I, though, advocate for three things when you are presenting with, or when you're starting to integrate technology into your classroom. First is start small. If you aren't listening to podcasts, it's probably too big of a leap for you to have your students start creating podcasts or vidcasts on Veroptics. So you need to take baby steps. And I think what I find with a lot of beginning level technical users in technology education is that they're afraid to take that first step because they think that I want them to create a podcast. No, I want them to go out and use Google to do some basic searching, if that's where they are. So think in terms of baby steps, making one step forward. The next is getting comfortable. If you're not using your handheld or keeping your grocery list, then you're probably not ready to have students beaming population data. So don't expect a teacher to go in and make these big steps until they're comfortable with the technology. If they're not emailing their mother or their grandma, then they maybe aren't ready to use email in the classroom as an instructional tool. Maybe they need to use it simply as a productivity tool at first instead of putting it in front of kids. We don't want to put teachers in a position where they're going to be uncomfortable in the classroom, then it increases their discomfort with the technology and we see less happening. So for those of you who are teacher trainers, let's focus on one small step at a time and getting them comfortable with the technologies for personal and productivity uses before actual instructional integration. The final thing, and this is an idea that came from Eric in his podcast, is set goals. Each semester or each year, he sets between 2 and 5 goals that he wants to do that involve technology integration. He states those on his podcast, making them public so everybody knows that he needs to be accountable for them. And then at the end of the year or the end of the semester, he goes back and reviews those goals and says, I did this successfully, yay, give me a pat on the back, or I didn't do it because I didn't have time or because I decided it wasn't as important, or I started it and I went on a different direction. But he does go back and revisit those and give reasons for why he did or did not meet his goals and plan for next time. And that's an important piece we know from the business world and from the business literature. To set goals really helps you to facilitate change. I've had a great time at this conference, and I only arrived yesterday. Have you guys found it incredibly helpful? This is one of my favorite conferences along with NEC, and I'll tell you a little bit more about NEC later, because I get so many great ideas. And so you have just had a few days of a barrage of wonderful integration ideas, and your head is just spinning. And when you go home, you're going to be so excited, and you're going to hit the reality of a classroom where you've got the kids coming in, and they've got the sniffling noses, or they've got, you know, the issues at home that they're bringing and walking into the classroom. So what I want you to do here at the end is, through this presentation, I want you to set 2 goals, and we'll do the goal setting at the very end. But it could be something that I present here, something you thought about even before you came to this conference that you were thinking about doing, or something that you've learned during this conference. But when you walk out of here, I want you to have 2 things that you want to do in your classroom between now and the end of the school year. And they can be small or big, but they should be starting small and getting comfortable with your comfort level. So with that, let's get started. The way that I have these examples set out is by starting out easy. Those people who need a little bit of hand-holding getting started need to just take those real baby steps. Then we're going to go into taking the next step when you have some technical competence and you're really ready to say, okay, I know how to use the computers. How can I really do this with some neat content integration with some social studies, and then at the end we're going to go to the exploring beyond. And so that's the last section, and then we'll come back to our goal setting. So here go the ideas. So put on your hats and pull on your coats, and let's get started. You've already mentioned some software. These are great done-in-a-day type activities, or something in an elementary classroom you can put in the back of the classroom. Things like using Oregon Trail or Carmen San Diego, or in your economics class, Hot Dog Stand. There's lots of great software. These are the three of probably the most popular for social studies educators. Yes?
Oregon Trail. It
does. Well, you know what? Usually in our classrooms, we don't have any intelligence. But,
okay.
That's it. A good point.
But I was thinking maybe you knew the
command. I do not.
Sorry. Okay.
What I see usually, the way this is being used, is usually in an elementary classroom as a learning center, or I see it used in a middle school classroom as a few days doing an activity in the class with it. And in that case, you do have a problem. A lot of these, the software like Carmen San Diego and Oregon Trail, I have had troubles using them on more recent machines. And so I hope that they will be coming out with more recent versions.
The Carmen does not work on PC at all. I had it set up on PC, and it would fail almost every time. I loaded a full version onto my Intel Mac, and it just flies.
Oh, it flies. Okay, and you haven't had one on your Intel Mac.
Yeah, Carmen and US, World and US just fly.
Okay, so I haven't seen either of these in vendors out there, but that will be required if we can mail them and see what's going on with that. So thank you for bringing that to my attention. There is software out there for use. And some other types of software, though, that aren't just your sit and done in the day type activities or your learning center activities, are Decisions, which again is an older product, and they haven't done a good job keeping up with it. But Tom Snyder does incredible stuff with group simulations. So this is a nice way for a teacher who really wants to focus on literature-based teaching and that wants to have group work and collaboration. I use this in a middle school classroom. I use colonization, and with my pre-service teachers, I use on Campaign Trail. Again, you have to make sure your technology is going to work. Yes, sir.
Well, part of the problem is that when Scholastic took over or bought out Tom Snyder, their emphasis shifted to lower level and math. If people want to write them, I'm sure that they'd be more than willing to listen to this. As social studies teachers would say, it's time to update and upgrade these.
Yeah, they're fantastic products, but they're definitely dated. And when we have students that are playing World of Warcraft for secondary, or they're playing Toontown, and then you put on something with such low-level graphics, that's tough. But on the other hand, for a lot of teachers, especially teachers that are new to technology, this is something they can learn how to use and they can feel comfortable using in their classrooms, and kids will love it because it's something different than the worksheet that our teachers are often putting in front of teachers, or in front of students. Another Tom Snyder product is TimeLiner, and this is great especially for younger kids to teach them chronology, and to just have them fun and engage with the technology and have them do their own reports. So these are really easy things to bring in. I did get some Tom Snyder product samplers that have both of these products on them, and they're in the back. So if you want to check those out, go ahead and do that. Inspiration is a fantastic product, and there are now free knockoffs of Inspiration that are available online if you don't have money for it. This is a great way to teach nonlinear thinking, so getting at that 21st century skills, but things like factors of integration, you can have students do push and pull factors. In a secondary classroom, I would probably use this as a lecture tool, and then, but I might also have them do it for homework if I could have them get access, or maybe on a computer day, or ask the computer teacher to have them do it. In elementary, we would integrate this all the time in the classroom. Also, it's great for formative assessment and for your pre- and post-assessment doing it at KWL.
What
are
the three versions of that?
CMAP tools. Inspiration, data.
No, those are not the free tools. Those are my Inspiration, but
CMAP tools is free.
Okay, and there are maps. Mm-hmm. And there are also some that are available for handheld for those of you who have it.
It's all the same pictures you're giving us today.
Yes, all of the information that is in here is mostly included on that table that I'm handing you. It will be in the paper that's in SSRP, or you can email me for it. Also, this slideshow offered in the Q space that they have available for presenters. Okay. Okay, so now we got some of the really basic stuff out of the way. We're still kind of on basic. For the easier level teacher, the lower level competence, we want to start with just doing some online research. So that can mean just emailing somebody, which isn't online, or getting onto Google. And I'm finding that teachers that I'm working with often do not know how to use Google. They don't understand what a browser is. So don't make the assumption when you're doing teacher training that they do. You need to actually go through and say, a browser is this, and this is what Google is, and this is what Yahoo is, and this is how you do a search, and teach them how to choose the right search terms. One thing that I found is for teachers who really aren't very confident yet in searching, that using a tool like the Delicious Social Studies site that my students and I have created is fantastic. It's a social bookmarking site, and I'll show you how to use that for more advanced technical use later. But it's a great place to go. It has social studies themes, grades, subject areas, cross-curricular, and also disciplines within social studies. So teachers can do a specific search. I'm looking for something on the 1930s, and I can find it and go from there. Primary sources are available from Kathy Schrock's Navigating Primary Source Materials. She has a fantastic site. If you want to find anything you can, Gilter Learman, especially you high school teachers. If you want to find a document that is Civil War or pre-Civil War, that's really the place to go. And the National Archives, of course, are fantastic. Some of the things you can find at the National Archives site that are fun and really motivating for kids, you can find videos of Annie Oakley shooting or Elvis Presley dancing. So bringing in some of that pop culture from the 20th century is really fun. And then Google searches, of course. And we all know how to do a basic Google search. If I want to do a lesson plan on the Statue of Liberty and I can't remember the name of that poem, I can type in Statue of Liberty poem. Or if I want to do a Google search and I want to find a lesson plan, I can write Statue of Liberty lesson plan. There's also, though, the possibility, and most teachers I'm finding don't know about this, is if you click on the Images button, you can see just images. You can also, if you go to the More, you can choose Videos. And if you type in next to Statue of Liberty or America the Beautiful, MP3, you can get just music. And so that's a nice way. When I'm looking for a song like Home on the Range, I type in Home on the Range, MP3, and all of a sudden I can find it on the first page of Google. So it's very, very, very useful. Some of the things that I might look for are just looking for the Acropolis, or if I'm doing a unit on the Depression era, I might want to type in Stock Market 1929 Graph. Or I might type in Marco Polo map. And it's amazing what you can come up with if you just use the right search terms. One thing that we often forget about, because we're so computer-based now, is the benefits of cable television. And in fact, I have a few copies of this, of CIC magazine, Cable in the Classroom magazine, and I will pass it around. This is this month's, it has a whole huge section on history, and it also has a section on social studies. And they also have, they always have, right in the middle of the magazine, a listing of the main activity, or the main specials that are coming out. So there are a lot of great programs that are always on Cable in the Classroom. And one neat thing about this offering in our school districts is, one, it's free, but the copyright is quite a while. So what happens is I can have my media specialist, or I can record something, I can then view it and determine if I want to use it or not while I'm exercising one morning, and then I can keep that until next year when I do my Native American unit and use it next year because it has a full year that I can use it. Some of the regular programs I like for primary level learners, we've got Dora the Explorer, great about mapping and language arts, or languages. And then there are also great specials like The President or The President's. You mentioned Ken Burns. Anything the Civil War that just came out is a fantastic one to use. And those are all, we can keep them for usually up to a year. It states how long you can use them, and your media specialist can look into that for you. Also, the Cable in the Classroom magazine is also available online, and you can have it sent to your home. So that's something that I would get at my home every month, and I would check through and circle what I want so I could see what I want for the following year. Many of the shows that are on TV also have companion websites. One that I really like for intermediate level and middle level learners is the Liberty's Kids program. And actually the program is also good for primary level learners because it's a cartoon about the Revolutionary War. It's on almost every morning. And if you've got TiVo, you can go ahead and download it. It's not exactly legal. You can put it onto your little iPod using some transfer stuff, and when you've got a kid in the back of the room who maybe just needs a break or is done with everything, you can sit them there with their little MyView goggles, and they can just watch Liberty's kids without anybody bothering them. So it's a nice way to calm some kids down, especially if you have some kids with a little too much energy some days, which I'm sure you would never have in your classrooms. So the Liberty's Kids site, though, allows you to go in and pretend that you are working at Ben Franklin's printing press, like the television show is set up, and you get to actually create a newsletter there that would be as if you were the American Revolution, just like the television show is set up. For those of you who are doing current events or you're doing civics classes, current events is fantastic by having students watch the CNN student news, which cleans up a lot of the blood and gore and death that we tend to see of a regular CNN headline news. And they have a companion site, so students can go back and look at that. Table in the Classroom also offers two simulation programs that are great for social studies, Elections and Windward. So these are both, one, the Windward is great for your geography class, and Elections, of course, is for civics and teaching about campaigning and government. Okay, next is Video on Demand. And notice that I'm still in the easy section here. This is not something that's terribly difficult for teachers. YouTube gets such a bad rap in education, but the reality of it is there's wonderful stuff that's out there. And so here's an example that Eric downloaded.
This endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
It's one thing to see that, it's another thing to hear it, and it's another thing to read it. And usually, we almost always give students, especially in secondary, the opportunity to read this. But to see it, and to see if we continue, you can see Jacqueline Kennedy in the background, and you can see the top hat behind him. And to actually hear how people responded and the voice inflection and the speech capabilities that he had, that's a very different experience for when we're teaching students about speeches and about John F. Kennedy than what they see when they read it in a book. So places to find these, YouTube, I mentioned Google Video, just clicking on videos when you're doing a searching. You've mentioned United Streaming, and they now call it Discovery Education Streaming, they just changed the name. And another one is BrainPop, and I have some information about BrainPop in the back. This is a fee-based service. They do have some free product available if you go online. These are great for younger learners, and now they have BrainPop Junior, especially if you're doing the citizenship and the communities that you do in primary level learning. Okay, WebQuests. These are also great for teachers who are just beginning because it's done in a day or done in a few days activities. Two of them that I like a lot are All About Explorers. Does anybody here not know what a WebQuest is? I figure in a regular, not in a Q conference, pretty much all but maybe two hands would go up. The WebQuest, the All About Explorers, this is a great site because what they do is they have all of these biographies about explorers that include misinformation. Your students have to go in and learn to think like historians and go and find what is real information and what is not real information. So it's a great way to teach historical inquiry and historical thinking. The other one, A Nation Divided, for your secondary level learners, middle school and high school, this is a site that allows you, that has students choose a battle from the Civil War. They do this in pairs, and one child in the pair becomes a representative of the North, and one becomes a representative of the South. They have to learn a lot about that Civil War, that battle, and then what they have to do is they have to write letters to each other telling about the actual battle, but from their perspective. Yes, ma'am. No, but why don't you write one? And what's neat is that in a WebQuest, like in many others, there's excellent resources for students to go and learn about individual battles and then do it. So, and you know what I would do? If you're probably you're technically high, I would have my students write the WebQuest for that. So that is where we move from the teacher facilitated to the student instruction. Okay, taking the next step. Now we're done with the basic stuff that you guys have done for years. Movie posters. This is, there's, like Google Labs comes out with really cool stuff, Flickr is also coming out with really cool stuff. Flickr Toys has something that allows you to create movie posters. posters. Eric in his classroom has had students read several, he does 7th grade American history, and he, or 8th grade American history. He's had his students read several books over the course of the years. One of them is Gorilla Season, that he's done a book blog with, and another is Year of the Hangman. And if I'll talk about book blogs later, but those, if you're interested in those two texts, Eric is using them very successfully with his middle school students. What he does is after the students read the books then, he has them go into Flickr Toys, to bighugelabs.com/Flickr, and he has them create a movie poster. How motivating is it for a student when you're sending them out to the web and saying, you need to find one picture that demonstrates, or you can create your own picture, take your own picture, that demonstrates the main theme of this book. And what a great thing to do during your state reading week to have them talk about main themes, especially in middle school. The other thing they have to do is come up with a tagline for the movie. They have to choose what it's going to be rated, when it's coming out. They also have to sign all of the character roles. They have to be the producers. So they can say, well, I think that Harrison Ford would be great for this part. Well, that tells you if you really know the character, because if it's this really sublime, quiet boy, then Harrison Ford probably isn't the right person for it. You know, maybe there would be a better character. And so they get to use their own pop culture to see how much they really know about the character studies of the people in that book. He used Flickr Toys to do this. I know that in Clark County School District, the likelihood of being able to use Flickr Toys is probably zero because of walking and student safety. You can do the same thing with Word. And so if you're in that middle level, all it is just using text boxes over graphics. And so that's a great way to bring us in. Podcasts. And at this stage, for the middle level, we're just talking about listening to podcasts. How many of you listen to podcasts already? Okay. To listen to a podcast, you just download iTunes, go into the iTunes store, and type in one of these things. And I suggest you type in Speaking of History. Eric started producing that about 2 years ago, and he calls it a podcast about history, education, and technology. And he basically tells what he does in his class, but because he's one of those refinement-level teachers, he does incredible things, and I get fantastic ideas. But he also goes to conferences like NEC, and he will interview people there and say, what's the newest, hottest thing that's out there in technology? Or he'll go out and say, or he'll go to Washington, D.C., go to where Lincoln died, and he'll actually interview the curator there about the experience. Yes, ma'am.
What's your
Langhorst, and it is written on that sheet. Did you get a copy of the sheet?
Yes,
it's on the very last page. His contact information and mine are both down at the very bottom. Okay? Right. Okay, some of them that he and I listen to, I of course listen to Speaking of History. KNPR's Story of the Day is fantastic. It's great especially for if you're doing secondary level geography or AP geography or civics because it touches on everything. If you're preparing a child for the National Geography Bee, I would have them listen to this religiously. It's a little quiz question every day. A lot of fun. It's only a few minutes, but it touches on everything in the world like you would expect KNPR to do. That was not the question of the day. That's the story. The question of the day, the quiz question is PRI's The World, a GeoQuiz. Another one, if you're doing current events in middle school or high school, the New York Times front page. That's a great way to have students learn about what's going on, but also those of us who maybe don't have time to read the whole newspaper every day or even read the front page, you can sync your iPod to do that, listen to it in the car, and you'll know what the news is each day when you get to school. So that's a nice way for us to keep abreast of what's going on in our world. Great Moments in History is fantastic for probably intermediate all the way to high school teachers. What they do is they take a different theme in history, like the Salem Witch Trials, and they do an on-the-spot audio presentation of it. So they'll say, this is so-and-so reporting from the Salem Witch Trials, and people take on different character roles. And so it's one of the old-time radio shows using information, factual information from that era. So it's a mock presentation. It's also great to have students listen to that and say, okay, I want you to create one of those for our American Revolution event. And that's what it's going to sound like. Colonial Williamsburg has a fantastic podcast. They do a lot of different things by just telling you about what's going on at Colonial Williamsburg. They do a lot about archaeology. They also do a lot by having the living historians come in and talk about how did you choose the clothes that you're going to wear, or why, how do you talk to the people when they come in. So if you prefer the arts education bent, that's a great place again, it's a very wide range of things relating to colonial Williamsburg that they include. And then history, according to Bob, is just lectures that Bob likes to do. You might want to listen to on a myriad of topics.
Another good one, too, is great speeches.
Great speeches. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great speeches is a nice one. It's if you want to get MLK or you want to, you know, hear something from FDR, you can go on and you can hear them there. And I believe great speeches has the real ones, but doesn't it also have people speaking for things that...
These are all actual recorded. You can get the...
But I thought they had some older ones from speeches like Lincoln that we might not have his actual voice recorded.
Yeah, those probably, I can't remember.
But it's really good. If you want to have, especially for your audio auditory learners, it's a great place to go. So great speeches. Thank you.
Another one that I got into was History 132 out of the University of Alaska Southeast. And it's all U.S. history. And it's a freshman college class. But he's a riot to listen to. He takes some topics and just makes it very interesting.
Well, there are lots out there, and there are more. They're growing. What I find that I do for those of you who are listening to podcasts or once you get started is if I go and I do a search for one that I like let's say I look for great speeches, it will also tell you other things that people that subscribe to this have also subscribed to. And that's how I learn about History 132 or History According to Bob or anything else that's out there. So it's a great linking tool. It's a great way to find citations to other things. This is another social bookmarking site that my students and I have created. It's on Felicious, and it's called Native_Americans. You can use it if you want to go, you want to find something that's on housing, it's an instructional tool, or you want to buy a lesson planner or a productivity tool helping you preparing for your lesson on European encounters. If you want to find a video or a web quest, you can find them by going to the site. The reason I'm showing this now, though, isn't because it's available. This is actually beginning level stuff. The reason I'm showing this now is because my students created this. Now, my students are teachers, but we know that our students, the kids in the school, are even better than our teachers at doing this. So imagine you create your delicious site, you know, Delicious Keeler, and on it I'm doing my American Revolution, and I say, okay, we need to go out, and each of you needs to find 5 websites, and you need to post it to our Delicious account. You have to tag them, and all of these are different tags. And you set up these tags. You say all of them need to be tagged with American Revolution. They all need to be tagged with maybe if they're related to a battle, or maybe they're related to the culture of the time. Maybe they're related more to the French, or maybe they're related more to the English or the Spaniards. And so you come up with those tags. The students then, what I did is they each had to come up with 5. They had to give the website a title, which is often a no-brainer because it's already there. They had to write 2 to 4 sentences so that people that go back will know whether they want to look at it, and they had to put in all the tags. Now, you can come up with maybe a student number or something safe. I also had my students add a tag of their own, which was their name. So when I went into grade them, I did a search for C. Keeler. My 5 sites, C. Keeler's 5 sites came up, and I could grade and see if he or she did a good job on finding their sites if they were applicable. And at the same time, we created great sites, and now, that's lesson 1. Lesson 2 is, now I'm going to have you go do virtual museums, which I'll show you in a few minutes, and this is where you can go and get information because these are pre-approved sites where we've already found our good. So that's a way that you can use them instructionally. Do any of you have... Yes?
With younger students, though, since they are out, you're sending them out to go with, like, go search, how do you then ensure that while they are searching,
you don't. And Alan November talks a lot about this, and I tend to agree a lot with what he says on the topic. Excuse me, which is, you know what? They're going to do it, and we're going to see those inappropriate things. Now, I know that in the district where I work with teachers, almost everything is blocked, like Google Images. You can't get to Google Images. And how sad is that? Because all of us use those as tools, and when our students leave our classrooms, they're going to use it. And when they go to their jobs and when they leave our school, they transition into the employment world, they're going to use it. So why don't we teach them in school to teach to use it appropriately so that they can, and I think all of you would probably agree with that. The problem is there's the safety issue, usually from parents and administration, and they decide, and you don't have that choice. So what I advocate for is you teach them. You're going to go out, you're going to find some things that are in them how to be responsible using their acceptable use policies, I think is much more responsible for us as educators than blocking them out of everything which has happened. But, you know, the reality of this, the way I search, I hardly ever find anything inappropriate because of the searching terms that I'm using. But that's because I refine my ability to search. Now, if I'm going to look for something that, you know, you're going to look for some topic, here's a great example. The word transparent. This doesn't really fit to social studies. One of my students said that his son was doing a science project and had to define transparent. So they went to Wikipedia, and he found a great definition of transparent, and he found a great image to teach about transparent, and that was a naked woman behind a shower curtain that was transparent. But he understands that boy will always remember what transparent means, but do you really want that boy seeing that? No. Okay. Well, of course, I thought that was, you know, I thought, I should go check that. That sounds kind of cool that they actually have it. Well, I go back to look, and you know what? Wikipedia has fixed the problem. Now they don't have a picture of a woman behind them. They now have a wet t-shirt contest to show transparent. And now if you go, that's off too, and they probably made it so you can't get in. Okay, first of all, every one of your eighth grade boys is going to remember what transparent means after they've seen that. Number two, they'll tell all of their friends, and it hopefully will have been changed on Wikipedia. We know now that when there's inappropriate content on Wikipedia, or when there's non-factual or misinformation on Wikipedia, it is usually changed. We have research to show it's changed within minutes or hours that they put it up. So it actually is a very reliable source, despite what we're hearing in educational circles. But the point of that discussion is, let's go back to what Alan and November were saying. Our focus has to be on teaching them to learn how to use it appropriately. And if we're using it for educational uses in classroom, you might see some of those transparent examples. But more often, when they're looking for something that's on, you know, the Battle of Lexington and Concord, they're going to find something on Battle of Lexington and Concord. And they're probably not going to find something that's inappropriate. Another great example that Alan November uses is the MartinLutherKing.com versus MartinLutherKing.org site. One of them, I think, .com is the one that is actually produced by Stormfront, which is a white supremacy organization. So teaching students to understand that is something that should be a part of your curriculum. And the next S is very clear about explaining that we need to teach that to kids. So instead of hiding it from them, let's teach it to them and move on and start using it for educational purposes. But that's a long answer to your question. It really doesn't help you as a teacher because it's already blocked. Is there something else we're
thinking? No, that's fine.
Yeah. So, handouts. Do any of you have access to handouts in your classroom? Okay, then I'll quickly go over these. There's some great programs out there. All but one of these is free, Inflation Master. You can also find these online, I'm sure, just to use with your computers. You can have students go in and say, how much was Babe Ruth making in, was it 1930, 1941 or something, versus how much would that be in $2007 based on inflation? And how does that compare to what great baseball players are making today? So that's a neat thing to do for your economics class. Drop cares is very similar to what you were talking about, your flashcard, because it's very visual. What happens, it's kind of like Tetris, where you have two things fall from the sky, maybe a picture of the Sydney Opera House and a picture of the Australian flag, and you have to know that those two go together. It doesn't go with the German flag or the US flag. So it's a fun little game to play, and something that you might want to put on more is just to, you know, if you have a kid that's not listening, you can have them for your play.
Is that a program that you need to buy?
No, it's free. It's downloaded. And you can create your own drop pairs, but I'm not technically enough to do that. But it's a neat little thing that the break for a learning center, if you have any old handhelds, you know, you probably upgraded, you now have a phone that's the handheld or whatever, get those on those old machines and put them in the back of your classroom for a learning center.
Do it work on a computer or do you have to have a
Drop pairs is for the handheld, but you mentioned the quiz, what was it called?
Lemonade Stand has a computer, so.
Yeah, it does. Flashcard Friends is one she says it's available for free online, that's a bit similar. Lemonade Stand, many of you probably played that, like a hot dog stand, great for your economics classes. Pocket City, which is Sin City, and Cooties, which is the MIT program that's great for teaching movement in geography. Virtual field trips. We know that the reality of the classroom is you can't afford to take your kids on field trips, and you definitely can't take them on field trips out of your city in most cases. But we do want them to know what the White House looks like. We do want them to know what the rainforest looks like. We do want them to know about our world. And so one way to show them is to put them into a virtual museum and let them look around and let them play. Some examples here are Passport to Knowledge, which is about the rainforest, for probably your intermediate middle school learners, and the White House tour. This one is actually very text-based, so I would probably use it with intermediate and up. Other virtual field trips, and these do cost, the electronic field trips out of Ball State University. Eric uses these and gives them really high rankings, but again, there is a cost involved. They have wonderful topics that they cover. One of them, I think, was diamonds in the dust, and that was using baseball in the Manzanier internment camps. Another one they have is called Freedom, Some Assembly Required, to teach about the development of the So a great place to go and get field trips that are very well organized. These, again, remember, are in the middle section of what I would expect for technical competence. The reason is because a teacher can go and learn all about this one product or this one activity, use it for a short period in his or her class, and then be done with it. So it's great for somebody who wants to just set one goal and is kind of scared of technology but wants to try something different. You can do this as a standalone thing. I'm not asking you to change everything, just one little thing. Okay, embedded resources, and if you heard Hall Davidson speak, did any of you just hear him or hear him over this conference? If you've never heard him speak, go hear him. He's a lot of fun, and his energy and his knowledge are both phenomenal. So please go hear him. One thing that he said is never create a PowerPoint without an embedded video, and in this case we've got embedded videos, but we also have embedded PowerPoints. So this is a video that I created based on the lesson plan that I learned from Dr. Jennifer Ponder, who teaches here at Cal State Fullerton. And what we do is we start the students by giving some introduction to immigration using a video that I took off of the United States Discovery Education.
When we speak of immigration, we speak of people moving from one country to another.
This is about a two-minute video. One nice thing about Discovery Education's videos is they're only 2 or 3 minutes. And we know that what tends to happen to teachers is they find a 45-minute video, they plop the kids in front of it, maybe ask them some questions during it or after it, and that's it. What Discovery Education allows you to do is only take a few minutes of that video and show what's just applicable and use it for that teachable moment or use it right when you want to teach a specific concept about something. So I introduced the concept of immigration, and then we do a simulation activity. So I've got my audio, my auditory learners and my visual learners now engaged, and now I literally get them on the floor and I start spraying water at them and throwing fake bugs at them, fake mice at them, so they can experience what it's like to go across the Atlantic in the 1880s or in the 1600s, depending on what concept I'm teaching. And then I say, we reached America, and the lights are on. When it's been dark and you've been cramped and I made him sit in this place, and now all of a sudden I tell you, you can get off the boat and go to your seats, and this starts playing in the background, and this light comes into the classroom because it's been so dark, and students in first grade can start to tell you what it felt like to be an immigrant that arrived in the United States between the 1600s and between 1900. They can actually feel it because they've experienced it through the simulation. The music really helps a lot, and all I did to create the slide, I went on to Statue of Liberty, clicked on images, found the image. I went to Google, I found the text from the Colossus, copied and pasted it, and then I went on and I found America the Beautiful, MP3 on Google, and I imported into this. And what an incredible learning difference this makes. I then do a little ending because I'm doing this for elementary with kids.
Very 20 years of meaning.
So that is one way to embed resources into PowerPoint. We've got audio, we've got video in there, and we also have some set up in there as well. Another thing is using templates. You've seen me add several things to this PowerPoint, but what I want to show you is something that I'm really excited about. It's a content topic that I learned at NEC several years ago. It's called Virtual Museums. And I can't recall who was the author of that, but it is on my blog, and I'll show you that address in just a moment. This is created by a teacher in one of my teacher education classes as an experiment for them to learn how to do it, or a demonstration.
United States in order to form.
Very few of the interviews talk about the effects of the inflation.
Hey, Mr. Hinton, I told him about StudyCast. The concept and the term was coined by Eric Langworth about a year ago. Mr. Hinton made his very first StudyCast, and he emailed me one morning and he says, Kristy, I have to tell you, one of my students just walked in and said he and his mom were listening to the StudyCast on the way to school. And that just gave me chills. Can you imagine? You know, maybe mom and dad will help you with your spelling words, but what's the last time they really helped you study for that history exam? And what a great way to do it. Most of them have the kind of capability to do that in their cars. Also, you can have students do audio reports, like this one by third graders.
Hi, my name is Brandon. And my name is Dylan, and we're going to talk to you about Memorial Day. Memorial Day was known as Decoration Day.
And how wonderful is that if you're dealing with special needs learners who maybe cannot write very well or cannot read very well, but they can communicate great, especially kids who tend to become your gang leaders are kids who could be great at this. They've got all that enthusiasm and all that charisma, but they can't necessarily write them on a paper. This is a great way to engage those kids. Now, though, moving from just the report to digital storytelling, I'm now having my students in pre-service teacher education. They just had to read a book by Brooks D. Simpson, and they had to pretend that they were a KNPR book reviewer, and using simply their iPod and an iTalk, which is just about a $20 to $30 attachment, they are creating audio reports. The next thing that they're going to do is then go in and use Audacity, a free tool, to edit those and actually create more of a story. This is one that Lisa did.
Hey, war fans, it's wartime. It's Lisa Frankson with KNPR. The question I want to explore is, do you really think Lincoln wanted to go to war?
Do you think your students might be interested in doing that type of thing during reading? Book clubs, I mentioned before that Eric does. What he does, he extends the reading in the classroom outside. He posts questions. The concept and Hirsch's framework. What I found recently is if you email the author of the book and you say, would you be willing to participate in this? They like it, and they say yes. So Pat Hughes participated in this one, and I recently got Dorothy Kusha Leland, who's going to help out with Sally Fox and maybe some having installed in the Little Boy of San Francisco things. How do students create their own blogs? And again, you can do this in something like ePals, but also you can use Blogger or another blogging tool. This is an elementary level teacher, Ms. Jenkins from Dowell Elementary School. They learned about Harriet Tubman, and you can see that they did some concept mapping, probably with inspiration. They used KidKids to situate Harriet Tubman and see what her life kind of looked like. And then what they did is the students had to each write a mock journal entry as if they were Harriet Tubman from a certain time period or event in her life. And then they had to write using a different genre, and she got them to do a lot of writing. So for them, they did the cross-curricular idea. Similarly, this is creative. You can use Word to create newspapers, or you can use high-level page layout software like PageMakers that I would use, especially if you have students in maybe your piece where they really do know PageMaker, how to create a news article. Okay, and the last one that I want to share with you is the one that we probably heard a lot about at this conference, and that's how do students create movies as TV stories. Resources to be able to do it. We know that you get to this one point and you can't do the next thing. So I want you to remember that there are available resources to you, and the best resources you have are your colleagues. They're going to come and ask you questions because you're the techie, so go and ask them questions too, because they're going to get their pet projects and get really good at them. And know that most of us enjoy, we're educators because we enjoy sharing our knowledge. So don't be afraid to email me or somebody else that you've met here and say, do you know how to do this? Seven things, attend conferences. fact, I highly, highly recommend this college. It's fantastic, and it is really intended like NCSS and Q for the practitioner, like most of you, and of course the Q complex. One place that I've made a lot of things available, like how to do that virtual museum, if you go to iTunes and you get the vidcast called Keeler's Training Videos, there are little videos on there between 2 and 15 minutes apiece that teach you how to do a lot of those things, like how do you embed a United Training video into a PowerPoint, or how do you go and do internet searching, or how do you use Audacity. TeacherTube is another great place to find those things. There are also listservs that you can participate in from the National Council for the Social Studies and Theory and Research in Social Education. And finally, there are, NCSS has just set up communities, and they have one for technology where you can go and ask your questions. So I am welcome, or I'm happy to answer any of your questions, and I hope that you learn at least something new and that you have your two goals that you're ready to go and do. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You want to do that? Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, that sounds fine. That was easy. That was great. It's just down the street. It's just down the street. Perfect. Okay, great. See you then. Over there. So you're over like Mesquite over there in that area? Okay, so you're, or do you want to be?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll just meet you up there. Okay. Okay, bye bye. Thank you.
That was a picture of people's profile picture. And he was really scared.
I've picked up tons of stuff since I've been going to a lot of these things. It's always something new I can learn.
There's always something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's even if I can walk over to the cucumber. I mean, we have great people today, but to see it. And all of a sudden, I live with this fun thing, which here is the street from the rent hall. And I was like, oh, no. And like, my teacher lets me be very proud of all that. And it's great to hear these people discuss, you know, about the classical and medieval rent hall.
No, you're not taking my time at all. Like, you were so hoping. I'm, and this is on your website?
Yeah.
Okay, here.